Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 21 of Season 4 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we take a hilarious and poignant journey through the 1989 Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan rom-com When Harry Met Sally, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Brett Stillo, formerly of 5 Minutes of Banzai and 5 Minutes of Trouble and a whole bunch of other things. Welcome back to the show for this season, Brett.
Thank you, Rob. It's nice to be back. Though I'm still wiping the dust and soot from our last meeting at the Nakatomi Tower, you know, just I'm a little messed up from that, as I don't know how you are after that.
But yeah. Well, it's nice to see you embracing life in this manner.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. But yeah, the when last we met, it was the summer of 1988. And we were
the summer of 1989. It's a year later.
It is a year later, which kind of fits in partly into the narrative of this motion picture we're talking about today.
Yes.
And
yes.
What motion picture are we talking about?
We are talking about When Harry Met Sally. And we're right now still in 1980. We're stuck in 1982, at least for the beginning of this week. We'll get out of that little rut along the way. But as of now, we're in 1982. So episode 21 begins with Harry answering Sally's question and ends with Harry analyzing Sally's problem. So, I mean, I've mentioned this over the last 20 episodes. You know, this is a very dialogue heavy movie. So some of the times I'll just be reading off the entire dialogue and then we'll go back and try to, you know, analyze it a little bit because, you know, you want to break it up. You want it to flow much better. Especially when dealing with Harry and Sally.
Are you just to clarify, though, are you saying we're going to analyze this?
Yes, we
analyze
are.
Analyze that?
Yes, like, we will analyze this and analyze that. And, you know, you say tomato, I say tomato.
Tomato, yeah.
You say potato, I say potato. You know, it could be any way.
Yeah. I think Billy might approve. So, yes, that works for me. That sounds good.
I'm glad because, you know, you don't have a choice. That's just the way we do it here, you know.
So plus we're on an airplane technically,
true. We are on an airplane, and you can move up one row, but you can't do anything else, you know, or move back one row, you know, if someone is agreeable to let you do so. You know, I think that's what it comes down to in the end. You know, you have to have someone who's polite and nice that wants to switch places, you know, in order to have this discussion. Something like that? I don't know. So we ended things on Friday with, you know, Harry availing himself of the seat next to Sally as they're on this flight, which in the movie we don't know where they're flying to. In the script it says they're flying to Washington, D.C. But we don't know. There's no hints in the movie itself. You know, even a little later on, you know, this week we'll see that they're in the airport. You also can't figure out where they are. You know, maybe someone who has more intimate knowledge of, you know, airports from 1982 would know, but I don't, you know, so we'll leave it at
the
that.
Right man for that episode.
Tuesday
or Wednesday because, I did a doctoral thesis on early 80s airports, as it turns out, as fate would
have. Wow. It's a good thing we have a count around here. A doctor count.
My many titles, but we're on a United Airlines 737.
Yes, that we are
in 1982, and it's dialogue. Would you say it's dialogue heavy or dialogue rich?
I would say it's dialogue rich because the listening to these conversations between Harry and Sally, which are really conversations between Rob Reiner and Nora Ephron, is just amazing. And both Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan know how to deliver these lines so beautifully because their conversations just flow. The chemistry between the two of them, despite the fact that they are, I think there's like a 14-year difference between the two of them age-wise. Yes. And they still are able to have such great chemistry on screen, you know, together. This is like not, I've just mentioned this before. This is not a couple that you would normally put together because you would say, no. What? There's no way that those two would fit. But in this movie, they do. There's no question about it, you know. And as great a couple as Meg Ryan is with Tom Hanks, I think she has better chemistry with Billy Crystal in this movie, partially because of the dialogue. But I don't know. I mean, that's my opinion. You can disagree. I see the look on your
No,
face.
no, I
You're
think.
debating it. I see.
Oh,
I
no,
see.
I'm.
I see the debate between behind your eyes.
I am considering what you're saying because, yeah, excellent casting of Billy Crystal
Yes.
on in here.
Yeah.
Maybe you've already talked about that with previous guests, but one thing I'll say right off the bat is that I found interesting was, just the casting and kind of remembering back to 1989 and how, oh, this was kind of a weird choice for a leading man
Yes,
in
for sure.
some
In a
ways.
romantic comedy. Forget about,
And
in anything. I mean, to put him in a comedy, I can understand. But to put him in a romantic comedy in 89, that was a long shot. And I think it has to do with the fact that he and Rob Reiner were good friends. And Rob Reiner said, okay, he's the guy who can play me, more or less. Because his
yeah.
character is Rob Reiner. And Meg Ryan's character, Sally, is Nora Ephron. I've listened to the commentary tracks, the two commentary tracks on this DVD numerous times. I've refreshed my memory. Every week I refresh my memory on those episodes. But it's just great listening to the fact where Rob Reiner will say, "Oh, that scene is Nora Ephron. I we took a quote, word for word from something that really happened." And Nora Ephron would say the same thing about Rob Reiner, or one of them would say, we'll talk about this a little later this week, but Nora Ephron says, an entire scene that we're going to talk about, I think on Thursday and Friday, she said this really happened. This is word for word from something that happened to her, and they make it so believable the way that it all plays out here. So, it's great.
Indeed,
So
indeed.
on Friday we ended things with Harry telling Sally that he's about to get married, and Sally. And again, Meg Ryan has an amazing delivery by saying, "Who? With whom? Who is willing to marry you? Who is she?" I
Right.
think she says, "Who is she? Who is she?" And he gives a standard, it's a very emotionless response. He goes, "Helen Helson, she's a lawyer. She's keeping her name." And then Sally just starts laughing, and she really can't stop laughing, and says, "You're getting married?" He goes, "Yeah," and she continues laughing. And he goes, "What's so funny about that? It's no." And she's like, "It's just so optimistic of you, Harry." And Harry responds, "Well, you'd be amazed what falling madly in love can do for you." Once again, not saying this very convincingly. And then Sally says, "Well, it's wonderful. It's nice to see you embracing life in this manner." And then Harry says, "Yeah. Plus, you get to a certain point where you get tired of the whole thing." And Sally looks at him and goes, "What whole thing?" He goes, "The whole life as a single guy thing. You meet someone, you have a safe lunch, you decide you like each other enough to move on to dinner. You go dancing, you do the white man's overbite, go back to her place, you have sex. And the minute you're finished, you know what goes through your mind? How long do I have to lie here and hold her before I can get up and go home? Is 30 seconds enough?" And Sally just looks at him and goes, "That's what you're thinking? Is that true?" "Sure, all men think like that." Then he says to Sally, "How long do you want to be held afterwards?" "All night, right?" "See, that's the problem. Somewhere between 30 seconds and all." And then that's the end of the dialogue for this minute. So, it's a great conversation between the two of them. Okay, and now we'll go a little bit into more detail of the conversation itself. So first, he mentioned that her name is Helen Helson. Okay, do you know the definition of the name Helen? Like what it means, the meaning of it?
I used to. I do. I should point out to you and our listeners that my late mother-in-law, was a Helen. So I know it's come up, but of course I always think of if you're a Kids in the Hall fan, and it's one of my wife's favorite skits. 99 Helens all agree.
I'm not necessarily I'm not familiar with that.
I'll send you a link and listeners, I'm sure you can find it on YouTube, but it was basically a field in Canada filled with non-actresses all named Helen. And it was just sort of a, you know, it was a very, very Python-esque sketch. But anyway, that's, I at some point, I've known what the name, the meaning of the name, but I can't recall now.
Okay, do you know where it originated from? Like, you know, how far back do you think the name Ellen goes?
Oh, I'll bet you, you know, I am picturing Anglo-Saxon Europe.
Maybe no, it goes even further. Or... It goes back to ancient Greek. It's an ancient Greece. Okay.
Helen of Troy, perhaps. That is correct. Yeah, of course.
That is correct.
Oh.
Okay. It sort of means the definition is like a torch, but part of the whole thing is that no one knows exactly where it comes from. They know that it came from ancient Greece, but there are arguments as to where it came from. Did it come from Helen of Troy? You know, did it come from a Greek word called Selene? Back at the time, nobody knows. There is a Saint Helena, which is a reason why many Christians use that name. She was the mother of Emperor Constantine I, who, according to legend, found a piece of the cross that Jesus was crucified on, and when she was traveling to Jerusalem. And during the first half of the 20th century, Helen was a very popular name in the U.S. For World War II, it even quite often was listed in the top 10 names for baby girls. So I guess that sort of goes back to maybe why your mother-in-law was named Helen at the time.
Exactly.
So that makes sense.
She would totally fit into that timeline. And but Helen Helson. Now that's an interest because it's almost like a double, like, you know, it's almost like her name's Helen Helen.
She's a superhero because she has the you know,
double H.
There you go. You know, they do that quite often in with superheroes. You know, that they're you know, that the first and last name start with the same letter. You know, alliteration. And I remembered. I didn't even have to look for it. I was about to go look for it, and I, you know, so maybe that was the issue. Maybe she's a superhero. You know, she's not just a lawyer. She's a super lawyer. You know. Now, have you ever heard the name Helson before?
I've heard a variation, Hellstrom. And I can't remember that. In fact, it's funny. I believe there is a Marvel Comics character named Damian Hellstrom. So, but Hellstron with an
no. This is well. Here it's Helson.
Helson.
Helson. That's okay. Right. So it's actually an Anglo-Saxon name that came from a family who lived in the village of Elkin, which is in the county of Cheshire. Which I don't know where on, you know, the English map that is located. Apparently there's a town in Cornwall that's also named Helston. No, sorry, that's named Helston.
Helston.
But here it's Helton. Helson. Okay. Oh, this is getting confusing. Here it is Helson. So forget Helson. About what I mentioned about Cornwall. Cornwall is a different name. All right.
Go ahead.
No, you can go ahead.
Oh, I just do we have any clue, any hint, any reference in, say, the Nora Ephron archives, or, you know, if we could get Mr. Reiner on the show, like where that name might have possibly come from?
No, they don't mention it in the commentary. You know, I was hoping they would say, you know, that one of them would say, oh, that was an ex-girlfriend of mine or something like that, you know. I don't know. I mean, because we know that Rob Reiner was married to Penny Marshall beforehand. But, that, you know, there's no alliteration there. So, don't know.
Yeah, just, you know, because it's, you know, I do some writing. And one of my favorite things is to come up with names. And, you know, sometimes it's an obvious, you know, like saying hello to somebody who might read it. Sometimes it's a bit of an Easter egg, sometimes you just hear like a certain, you know, something about that name just, you know, reminds me of, you know, a character from a comic book or a, you know, a 1930s screwball comedy. You know, that definitely sounds like, you know, the other woman.
Right.
You know, like, okay. You know,
that makes sense.
It's like Ralph Bellamy, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
that's the name of a loser. I don't know. I can't describe it more than that.
Okay. So. No, that makes sense. I mean, the name, I mean, besides the fact that it originated, you know, in Old England, there's proof that there was someone who emigrated to the colonies, you know, during the 17th century. There's a man named John Helson who arrived in Virginia in 1664. So, I mean, the name has been around for quite a long time, you know, and it did migrate to America also, you know, that type of thing. Now, the last part of his sentence is even funnier because he goes, she's keeping her name. You know, she's a lawyer and she's keeping her name, which nowadays I would say is more common than it was back then. You know, back then. Like, what percentage of women in the U.S. nowadays do not change their name and they keep their maiden name after they get married? What percentage would you say?
Let's see. I would say it's probably changing rapidly. I'm gonna say it's past 50%. Actually, I'll play it safe. I'll say it's 50-50.
No.
What?
Most women in the U.S. there's 68.5% that actually change their names, and then you have 23% that keep their last names, and then you have 8.9% that will choose something else, such as hyphenating their names or name blending, you know, things like that. So, yeah, you know, but in the LGBTQ plus community, that is 50%. You know, it's 50% people who take on the name and 50% that don't. So, and like, what type of reasons do you think that women would keep their name or change their name?
My wife kept her name. So, for one thing, her last name is Wolfman. That's a really cool last name.
Sounds like another superhero.
There. Yeah. Right.
Well, so does Brett Stillo. Brett Stillo does sound also like a superhero. So, you know, even though there is no alliteration here.
But yeah, I mean, there's, I can think of a number of good reasons. You know, we for the record, we had that discussion before we got married. It was not a lengthy discussion. But yeah, she had three or four really good reasons. One was just, you know, the legal hassles of changing your name when you get married. Two, you know, if you have a career, if you have professional in some way, you know, changing your name, you know, it's like, this is who I am. It's like changing your identity. So, it stands to reason, like, yeah, keeping your name. And again, it was just, it's a cool name. Can't, you know, like, so, probably, you know, probably other reasons. So,
right. So one of the reasons that people do change their names is, you know, for traditional reasons, you know, that's like the, you know, if you were to do the Family Feud, you know, top 100 people surveyed, you know, that would be the top reason that people want to embrace tradition. Sometimes people do it because they're concerned that the children will end up confused or unhappy if their parents have different last names than they do. That could be a problem too.
True.
I mean, I know people who, you know, the woman doesn't change her last name, but then they decide what last name to give each of the kids, you know, which gets really confusing because, you know, each kid has a different last name. You know, I even heard of a case of someone who had three kids where one kid had the father's last name, one kid had the mother's last name, and the third one had a hyphenated name of the two. So it does get a little bit confusing from that perspective, you know, but obviously to each his own, to each his or her own, you know. This article also talks about the fact that, you know, if you do, it sometimes will take a lot of time and money based on one of the things that you said of changing your social security number. Changing the information for your social security number, your driver's license, voter registration, insurance, passport, banking accounts, credit cards, rent, mortgage, and utilities, HR at whatever, wherever you work, social media profiles, email addresses, things like that. You know, like my wife took on my last name, and sometimes she hyphenates it and sometimes she doesn't. Because she has two kids from the first marriage. So, you know, when she wants to be identified for them, like in the local phone book, we're actually listed twice, once under our last name and once under her previous last name. So that if someone were to look were to look up, they'd say, oh, I have a friend, I want to look up their phone number. So, they wouldn't know to look under the other last name, that type of thing.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of reasons why people do it and stuff like that. So I just find that interesting that in 1982, he's making this comment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that kind of double time warp. Yeah. It's 1989 when he says it, or in 88.
Right.
But it's even earlier, and it's his tone.
Yes.
Mr. Crystal has a fascinating, we could debate, what is that, this, the way he delivers that line.
Because he goes, just keep your name. It's as if he's already saying that he doesn't have a say in this. This is her decision. She's decided that she's keeping her name. I don't have a problem with it, and I'm leaving it that way, and that's it. Because that's what she wants. So I'm going to do whatever it is that she's requesting that I do. That type of thing, which makes sense.
Yeah. I took a real deep dive into it. And, Harry is, he's a political consultant, but I think he was, he must have been a damn good lawyer because he's really doing, in this minute and the next minute, he's arguing his case. He's going back and forth. He would have given Perry Mason a run for his money.
You wonder why he went into political consulting instead of, a previous guest mentioned this, I would love to have seen him in court, arguing something, like something on the level of My Cousin Vinny type of thing, just being able to shoot from the hip, do what you need to do, to get your client, their due justice, whatever it is.
Yeah, because I wonder if he's saying it to confound Sally. It's almost like, hey, I'm progressive. I'm not the guy from 1977. You remember? It's like, I'm hip. I'm cool. I'm a feminist. And
that's very fair.
But right. Yeah, but he also has that. He had this. It's the shortness that makes me suggest, but he's at the same time, he's not cool with it. He's just saying it as he's trying to get some points with Sally, but he's also not into it. Cause I think one thing about Harry, he's a very traditional guy.
Yes.
To say the least.
I don't know. Traditional is, I think traditional is too progressive for him.
But it's an interesting read, because there's a certain shortness the way he says it. I think we can agree. He's almost saying, I'm cool with it. I'm not cool with it, but I'm cool with it. And it's like, okay.
I'm going with the flow. I don't like it, but I'm going with the flow.
Yeah.
I think that's more the line. Now, what's really funny is, Harry and Sally met 5 years earlier for, apparently, they talked about an 18-hour drive, in their world, even though it's a 12 or 13-hour drive in our world.
Interesting.
But, interesting. OK, so they had 6 more hours in this alternate reality to continue getting to know one another. But, after 5 years, how many people would you remember details about them after 5 years like this? Like Sally immediately remembers, how much of a pessimist he is. and she just goes, "It's so optimistic of you, Harry." I think about it. Someone who I haven't seen in 5 years, even someone I was even closer with than possibly, Harry and Sally are. There are aspects of their personality that I'm not going to remember after 5 years. I guess he really made a big impression on her.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's also part of the movie. Part of the idea of the movie is that, these two people make such an impression on one another in these, in these brief encounters, that it does, it does last for them much, much longer into their lives.
Agreed. And I think it brings up the much larger question, I think there is an attraction you know, even in 1977. I think that's why they, you know, when they have these chance encounters.
Well, an attraction from Harry goes without saying, because Harry, you know, propositioned her in 1977, and, you know, he's now spending his time talking to her, even though he is engaged.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's, you know, it's the same technique in the car. He's sort of, I don't care. And, you know, in a sense, when he's talking about his fiance, he's spitting out the grape seeds.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So he's, it's time for me to get married. You know, it's good, you know? And
it's funny, because you think that Harry wouldn't get sick of the single life. You would expect him to enjoy that type of life. You know, that's the type of character that we expect from him. You know, because he's not someone who you would expect is seeking out love. I mean, even when he says, you know, you'd be amazed what falling madly in love can do for you. You know, and I don't buy it the way that you know, that Harry delivers it. My impression is that he's settling here. This isn't what he really wants, but he's like, okay, I can live with this. You know, apparently Helen Helsin is a woman who doesn't need to be held after sex. And therefore he's like, okay, great. That's what I want.
She's too busy doing legal briefs, but,
with Ira, you know,
Ira. I am highly suspect of this version of Harry. Again, we almost feel like he's doing legal maneuvering.
Yes.
And, you know, is it all, well, let me ask you a hopefully not too personal question.
By all means.
Have you ever had that experience of someone you maybe think you're on a date with, or you're interested, you know, and you're sort of like, you're talking to someone and they're talking about, you think we're on the same level, but, you know, suddenly it's like they're like talking about somebody else, and my thought would, back in the day, is, okay, are you telling me like you're not interested in me, or do you want me, are you telling me this because you want me to sort of like reach out and say, hey, forget about him, you know, like, are you trying to somehow gauge my true feelings by talking about this other person?
I think most people have gone through things like that. You know, it's typical that's what you do. You know, when you're out doing the round robin dating, you know, trying to find, you know, it's another Nora Ephron quote, but from, you know, Sleepless in Seattle, when, you know, he mentions the fact that you go and date people in order to try on different people to see which one fits best. You know, that's what it comes down to, you know, so yes. And that's, you know, it's the same thing. It's funny. I mean, as you know, in my day job. So I sometimes do interviews, you know, to hire people and stuff like that. And in some ways, you know, an interview is like a first date type of thing. You're asking questions to see how someone will react to those questions.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's not a question of whether you have a right answer or a wrong answer. It's just, you know, the questions don't have a right or wrong answer. The questions, you want to see how the person reacts to the question and how they respond.
Then, you know, I think we definitely get this in minutes 22 and 23.
Yeah.
It makes me want to ask hopefully I'll try to remember this question tomorrow.
Okay.
Something in regards to Harry and Sally.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. So, I mean, basically, I think this whole minute can be summed up with the fact that Harry really thinks he's got it all figured out in life.
Yes.
And he's trying to give over that knowledge to Sally, who, because the two of them are so different, you know, she'll never, I can't say never, at this point in her life, she will not understand what it is that he's trying to say, for the same reason that he doesn't understand her. You know, it'll take time for the two of them to start figuring out the other one and get on the same wavelength. But now they're still very far apart.
Very much. And, you know, I would just add, you know, tack on to that, you know, I think I question Harry's, you know, yeah, his confidence and where he's at in his life, because it's he just seems to be trying, you know, it's in some ways he's trying to prove to himself that, oh yeah, look at me now. I'm not sitting next to you in a car. Now I'm sitting next to you in a plane.
Yes.
and then other than that, I had fun with this minute reminding myself, oh, that's not a real airplane. It's probably, you know, quick question. Do you know if they, it's as far as the interiors, did they shoot in New York or was that in Hollywood somewhere? It's in terms of your, you know, your apartment scene.
From what I understand, they filmed it all in L.A., but I could be wrong. You know,
okay.
Those are one of the things that I rarely, you know, check into, because it's less interesting to me, you know, where they filmed it. You know, is this on a studio in New York? Is this a studio in California or whatever? But I think I recall somewhere that this was done in L.A., but I could be wrong. So
I thought of our good friend and fellow podcaster, Mr. Jim O'Kane. Hello, yes. Jim.
Hello, Jim.
Hello, Jim. And he probably can tell you, give you an extensive.
He'll be able to tell you where you can buy these type of seats for the plane.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Which airplane interior is that? Which soundstage? You know, because you know it is. I did recognize that. Oh yeah, that's like that's kind of how I remember jets in the 80s looking.
exactly.
And it appears to be a 7-3. You know, say it's kind of a wide body,
right? And they didn't need to go that far back either. It's only, you know, 6 years for them at the time that they were filming this to go back,
right? Yeah, yeah. So, that was just a funny thought, because at one point, you know, you've got you know, a two shot of them in their row, and then then they cut to an over the shoulder of Harry looking at Sally. But then there's a shot where you see Harry, close up on Harry, looking at Sally. It's like, okay, they must have been able to remove the wall of that airplane so they could get in there.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, Jim will tell you that so many of these interior, you know, they are many times they are originally airliners, and then they cut them up so they can move sections and seats around. And, Jim, let us know.
Yeah. So, Brett, you have anything else you want to say before we get into the script here?
Last quick thing that, you know, I was high school graduation class of 82. 82, so 82 has a fun little, I have sort of a little bit of nostalgia for 1982, but it's only 5 years. It's a minor point, but, you know, I don't remember the way that they dressed Sally in her hair. I don't remember anybody looking like that in 82. That seems to me more like, you know, it was a funny little thing. Like,
right. I mentioned this last week and I don't mean it. I mentioned it and I don't think it's really, it's meant to be disparaging, but she looks like she's dressed like a flight attendant. You know, the way that they put the costume on her, you know, I don't know if that's on purpose or not. You know, I don't know if that's meant, you know, to try and say something about who Sally is.
You know? I'll mention this in a couple episodes, but I just figured out the entire ridiculous, intricate backstory of why Sally is looking this way in 1982. But let's save it. It'll give the audience something very exciting. Great. Oh, we want to find out why is Sally wearing that ridiculous bow tie? I'll tell you.
All right. Great.
All right.
So in the script, there's only one slight minor discrepancy, but I think it's a big one. Okay. When Harry is going through his diatribe and he says, you know, then you go back to her place, you have sex. And the minute you finish, you know what's going through. And in the movie, it says going through your mind. Here it's you know what's going through your head. Okay. It's a very minute difference. But he's asking that question to Sally, and then Sally responds by shaking her head no. Where in the movie, he just glosses right through it. You know, it's a rhetorical question.
Yeah.
You know, in the script, it's an actual question that he waits for a response for. You know, to make sure, because I think that, you know, he's he's giving Sally a little more credit in the script by waiting for her to respond to that type of thing, as opposed to just glossing right over it. You know, he's in the movie, it's a one-sided conversation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
By adding that little line in there saying that Sally shakes her head no, you know, it adds her to the conversation, which she basically isn't here. So whatever. I mean, again, this is the final cut. I have very little qualms about the way they did it. I think it's a great editing job here, and you know, it works really well. So that's fine.
Yeah, that is an interesting point to me because of the people who are involved in this, and you know, I can just imagine Nora Ephron, because well, you know, what did she work on the script on and off for 5 years, and so I can picture her, you know, imagining this scene, writing it, and yeah, maybe having a, you know, writing it so there's a beat there.
Right.
And but then yeah, then you have, you're on a set with Rob Reiner and Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan, and it changes, and
yes.
You know, the energy, the delivery, the beats, and I could also very much picture like Nora being on the set. It's like, we need a beat there. It's head, and it's like, you know.
Yeah,
it could, you know,
whether they filmed it and cut it out or not, right? we shall never know. What can I say?
It could also just be like, yeah, moving on. Let's set up the cameras.
Exactly. So every Monday we have a segment called Meg Ryan Monday, where my guests will give their top five Meg Ryan performances. So Brett, what have you got for us?
My top five Meg Ryan performances. I we'll go back to the early days of Meg Ryan, and I have to cite Amityville 3D.
Wow. 3D was terrible.
That's
your number five.
We'll call that my number five. There's not a strong order here.
No, there has to be. There has to be. I can't give it rankings. You know, I can't, you know, accumulate all the tally up all the points later. If you, you know.
Okay. I can adjust them. So yeah, but that is, as luck would have it, Amity is definitely a number five. Number four, Top Gun, movie with Meg Ryan I've seen the most often, but you know, not just, I saw it more for the jets than for Meg Ryan, but that's number four. Yet, you know, she has a memorable part. That was the first time I saw her. Number three, DOA.
Ooh, I'm a big fan of that movie. Have you seen the original?
Yeah. Kind of a bigger fan of the original, but nothing wrong with the remake. And, you know, we could go quick tangent about that, because, you know, we're in the 80s, we're in neo-noir land, you know, and a lot of classic noirs are being reimagined or inspired by. So, yeah, definitely DOA. And I think that's the first movie she did. No.
She did Interspace.
Yeah, because it's Interspace. So Interspace would be number two. Love Interspace. And you know what? Actually, I'm gonna do a tie for number one.
Oh, come on, that's cheating.
Okay, all right then. Now I'm gonna, fair enough. Then I'm gonna say number one is Anastasia. I don't know if that counts because it's just your voice.
No, that's fine. But you're telling me that Harry Met Sally is not on your list? Wow.
Well, you know,
you think she does a better job in Amityville 3D than she did here?
Well, you know, I'm not counting. I just figure, since we're talking about When Harry Met Sally, it's been a while since I've done my five here. So I was not counting When Harry Met Sally, simply because.
So what were you going to tie? What were you going to tie Anastasia with?
Anastasia is kind of a guilty pleasure movie, because on the one hand I think it's ridiculous, but I can't help but sort of like, you know, and it's not a Disney movie. A lot of people assume it's Don Bluth.
Yes,
but it's this whole.
Well, Don Bluth does darker animation, so it makes sense.
He does. That's a really good point. But at the same time,
you know, I've always been a big fan of Secret of Nim, you know, so
Secret of Nim was great.
Yeah.
And you see the correlation. But, you know, it's this whole crazy, like, let's reimagine the Russian Revolution with magic. So you have like this, like, Rasputin as an evil wizard. And, you know, and I'm a sucker for Bartok the Bat. And I, so yeah, so, you know, Anastasia, which is kind of a weird guilty pleasure, but then there's also Promised Land, a really gritty movie she did with Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah, that was very gritty.
Yeah. And I feel, I kind of, she, you know, she's done her, you know, Meg Ryan has, in some way, I can't quite put my finger on it. She reminds me of somebody like Barbara Stanwyck.
Okay. That's fair.
And yeah, so I kind of prefer when she gets gritty, or she has to go down a dark lane, and, you know, she's done her share of dramas and thrillers. Yeah, I mean, she's great here, of course. I mean, probably your best known, most popular role.
But, well, this was her first leading role also.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And, you know, and it's pre Hanks. So,
yes.
But yeah, those are my five.
Okay. You know, okay. That's so fair.
That's what I'm going
with. All right. Thank you very much for that, Brett. Do you want to tell people how they can find Brett Stillo?
No.
Anyone who wants to find Brett, write to me, and I'll just debate whether I send it to him or not. How's that?
podcasting wise, yes. I think my pal Josh Horowitz has archived 5 minutes of Trouble, about Big Trouble in Little China, and 5 minutes of Banzai, which is about the adventures of Buckaroo Banzai across the eighth dimension. Ignore the other seven.
All right. Thank you very much for that. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe. Any podcatcher might be using this to listen to this show. Finding me is very easy. Just do a search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So until tomorrow, I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having.
Gave me a thrill. With all your faults, I love you still. It had to be you. Wonderful you. Had to be you.